Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello, it's the Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio.
Eagles!
You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and you can already hear the lads from back of the nest. It's Nick Gillard and DR Kurnaz in the studio with me this evening, and we can open the show with some quite exciting news because the mighty Palace have been named the 46th best club in world football. That's according to 538's global soccer rankings. There are some big clubs above you, of course. Man City are top, which surprises me. This works on all kinds of different indexes. But 46th in the world, that's a pretty big football club.
Yeah, I guess so. There's lots of teams around the world. So considering that Crystal Palace, South London, 46th, that's actually really good.
We're sandwiched between Lazio and Wolfsburg.
That's pretty illustrious company. Those are historical clubs. You are, however, behind Krasnodar of Russia. You're behind Young Boys, who just beat you in a friendly.
Which is good, actually, to see that they're above us, so it will stop all the haters.
You should have lost 2-0 to a random team from Switzerland.
Sorloff has scored.
Has he?
In a friendly against Barn, he scored in the third minute.
Oh, wow.
For Crystal Palace?
Yes, or? that's undone all the... all the ire and...
Has it undone all of it, though, Nick? Because I think I could probably score in a friendly against Barnett. He was... Well, talk me through it. How much stick was Sorloth getting for his performance against Young Boys in that friendly earlier in the week?
Enough for me to mute his name on Twitter. Yeah. It was silly. So I got fed up and I muted his name for 24 hours.
What kind of things were people saying?
He's just saying that you can't kick a ball. And at times it was right because when it... I remember one moment where he tried to kick the ball and he kicked the floor and he fell. And it was quite worrying that
time.
We have
all done that.
Yeah, we have, but it's not, you don't want to do that when you're Sorloff, especially what happened before you went out on loan. So it was a bit worrying, but I really don't have high expectations for Sorloff anyways.
Here's a quiz for you. Who's he scored his only sort of professional competitive goal for us against?
Chelsea. Or was that disallowed?
Chelsea, that was, I think, you're talking about the one at Stamford Bridge, was, no, someone else scored that. Was it Chelsea?
No, it was Swansea in the League Cup.
Was I there?
It was away, I think.
Yeah, I went
you
there.
You went to Swansea?
I think so, but I can't remember him scoring.
I'm pretty sure it's Swansea.
I can't remember.
Well, if he's only ever done it once, I imagine he does. That's a pretty damning stat. Regardless of who you score your goal against, if your only one in a competitive fixture comes in the League Cup, you're not living up to your billing, you're not living up to your price tag. Is it time for Palace to cut their losses?
Who's going to buy him?
Exactly. It's easy to say get rid of him, but as Nick said, if you're not performing and... considering that he's probably on decent wages. I haven't checked his wages, actually, so I won't comment on that. But, if you're not performing, then he's going to be interested in him. And from what they've seen, he played at Ghent. I don't know how he actually performed there, but I know he scored a couple of goals there. But at Palace, if you're looking at his performance at Palace, if I was a club, I wouldn't really be keen on him as well. Unless he goes to a lower league club, which I doubt he will do, but... yeah, it is hard.
Now, older Palace fans will remember a player in the early 80s that we had called Trevor Aylott, and he was probably the worst player, especially a forward, that's ever played for Palace. I actually think Sorloff is going to surpass him. That's how jolly bad he is.
He's not even that young. He's 23. That's not a kid.
I know, but you have to show glimpses... I don't know. You have to show glimpses of hope. And I haven't really seen much of Sorloff. Well, when he came in, people were like, oh, wait, we might have someone special here. But it didn't quite work out like that. I know he played against some hard teams, such as Chelsea's. But even in games where he had against lower league sides, against clubs that are on our level, he still didn't perform. There hasn't been any signs of Sørloth succeeding at Palace so far.
When he signed, there was lots of hope. And I know of one person who had to wait a couple of days to get his Sørloth shirt from the club shop because they didn't have any of them funny Danish O's. I don't know what the correct word is, but they literally...
No, I think funny Danish O's is actually what they call them in Denmark.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
very good. Danish. The O with the diagonal line for it. Yeah.
We've got funny letters in Turkish as well, but I don't know what they call it.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Okay.
What was your point?
No, it's just that people were excited about
him. People were so excited that the club shop couldn't meet demand.
I think they were more excited about the fact that we brought in someone, considering you're looking at our strikers, there was no one really there. Benteke was out injured. So it was like, oh, we finally got a striker. And then when people actually saw him play, they were like, okay.
But it was a striker, £9 million. It's not an insignificant amount of money. He had a goal record of 1-2 from Thailand the year before. Why wouldn't you have been excited?
We didn't realise he'd peaked.
Yeah, peaked at age 23, yeah.
So you're fully convinced that there is no development to come here. There is no improvement. There is no future.
Well, if you actually look at the amount of games he's played, it isn't a lot. He hasn't had a proper season with us.
16 in the league for Palace?
Yeah, that isn't a lot of games, if you think about it.
It's quite a lot without scoring.
Yeah, but I know, but look at other Palace strikers. It's not only him. Batshuayi came in, but he already had Premier League experience. Sørloth is coming in without no experience like that. And it's a massive step coming into the Premier League. So he's only played 16 games. And we saw with Max Meyer last season where he played a lot of games, but he wasn't consistently playing as well, and it took a bit of time for him to get used to it. So I don't know. There could be hope, I guess, if he plays consistently, but I doubt that's going to happen because from the games he has played, unlike Max, he hasn't shown anything to convince the fans, and I'm sure Roy as well.
Yeah, I mean, Max played really, really well second half, didn't he, against the young boys?
Yeah, he changed the game. Max Meyer came on and he changed the game. Hopefully he's
changed the game so much that he didn't score any goals.
But we didn't let any in either.
True.
Well, it's not even that. We at least took a shot. That's the difference. He changed the game. The fact that in the first half, we were struggling to even take a shot. And when he came in, it was brilliant. And that's the type of performances you need.
If Alexander Sørloth wasn't 6'4", would Crystal Palace have signed him?
Don't know.
Really don't know. That's a good question, but I never thought about his height contributing to actually signing him.
Well, the thing that's made me think about his height is you were saying, well, listen, and you're saying quite rightly, if we do have to get rid of him, who's going to buy him? I was thinking of the last example of a big Scandinavian lump who signed up front for a Premier League team and it didn't work. Andreas Cornelius, do you remember him? Who signed for Cardiff City back in 2013. That was big, big money. We were talking about £8 million, which back then was more than it is now. He was hopeless. He'd scored loads of goals for Copenhagen, 29 in 91 in the league there, and 18 in 34 in his first spell. 8 appearances he managed for Cardiff, not a single goal. The only club they managed to flog him back to, straight back to Copenhagen. Is that what you're going to have to do with Sørloth? Is he going back to Norway?
Hopefully.
That's the thing.
It depends
on what he wants as well. Nowadays, players have power. You saw it with Riederwald in January, where Swansea were actually interested in him, and he didn't go because he doesn't want to go to Swansea. So it's not as easy as, oh, Palace want to sell him and we can send him back, because the player might not want to go back and he still has a contract at the club. Unless he buys it out, then he has all the right to remain at the club. And sometimes you don't really think about that. The player power, the amount of powers that players have nowadays, is more than you think.
Was he signed with that gentleman, you Cornelius? Was he signed by the Man United manager?
That's a very good question. And I think, to be fair on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he was signed by Malky Mackay, off the top of my head. Pretty sure.
What was he doing on the top of your head?
What was he doing on the top of my head? A little jig. It's actually quite painful.
All right. Okay. You asked a question earlier. Does it put you off signing players that you've never heard of?
Mm.
Southampton seemed to be able to pick up players I never heard of. He did very, very well. But then they probably had the manager. Yeah, they had the manager.
I mean, we got Luka Milivojevic, which when he joined, no one was really sure who he was. And he turned success.
I'd heard of him. He played for Olympiakos. He was their captain. He played in the Champions League.
Oh, so before he joined us?
When I heard he was joining us, I found out about him.
Yeah,
bless
like,
you.
During when he came to Palace, majority of the fan base was like, okay, he's Luka Milivojevic. All right, he does play for Olympiakos, but no one really knew him and watched him like that. So we've had a success there, I guess. And then you look at Serloff, which unsuccessful. Yak, unsuccessful. What other foreign signings have we had that's successful?
Riedewald.
Personally, I think that is successful in terms of there's a player there, but he's not playing. So does that count as successful?
He was all right at the weekend, I thought. Nothing.
Yeah, but Roy is not going to get... I think it's over. I'm still surprised. Every time we talk about Riedewald, I'm so surprised that he's at the club.
But you'd think with Roy working all across the continent, winning titles in various countries and knowing lots of people with speaking six different languages, we'd think we'd have a pretty good net of agents or people that he could call on.
But working across the continent, Roy got himself a reputation for having got a bad eye for a transfer. He'll forever be remembered at Inter Milan as the bloke who actively shoved Roberto Carlos out the door because he said he was never going to be good enough. Which, obviously, hindsight is 20/20, but Roy, possibly not your best move.
Yeah, you think about Kane taking corners as well. Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that. You just ruined my evening.
I mean, I understand that, but we've got Dougie there, haven't we? I know we're going to talk about him later, but he's more in charge of the transfers. So we've got a man there.
I'm going to rephrase my question that Nick answered very well there. It's not just about signing players you haven't heard of. It's about signing players from places, from clubs you haven't heard of. Because you used the Southampton example, which is spot on. They're signing some really top players who perhaps we didn't know. But, I mean, think about Lamina, who turned up and was great in their midfield.
Yep.
Gabon international, lots of people hadn't heard of him. Where did he sign from? Juventus. Similarly, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg in midfield, lots of people hadn't heard of him. Where did he sign from? Bayern Munich. Cedric Suarez, who was he? Where did he sign from? Sporting Lisbon. Maybe it's not about the names of the players, but it's about the pedigree of side you're picking them up from.
Perhaps. I mean, yeah, if they're fringe players at their club and they want to get more runouts, then maybe that is the way to go. Go for fringe players at teams.
Even look at the managers, they've had success there. I feel like it's just their scouting network that's just better than us for some reason, because they've managed to land in more players, more successful players that's Premier League worthy than we have. And you look at some of them players, they are some quality players, and the managers like Pochettino, they've had some very good successful business coming from abroad, and I feel like that's more dependent on their scouting network, whereas if you compare it to our one, it doesn't look that great.
What we don't want, though, it's been very, very quiet in the transfer window. We've had one player in, haven't we? Henderson, the goalkeeper. Yeah, third choice. We could talk about that in a bit. Nobody else has come in. People are starting to get worried. I think the biggest worry is that we get so close to the transfer window that we just buy anybody to be seen that we're buying people. But I also know that Roy doesn't actually get much input in what players he wants. He just tells Dougie and the people upstairs what type of player he wants.
Yeah, but
to fill in a position, and then it's down to them. So there's less of a role for the manager in picking players at our club, it seems.
Yeah, in terms of bringing in players, I'm not really hopeful. It's just weird. I'm not hopeful, but I'm prepared for it, because it's been too quiet for my liking. I know we've been rumoured with players, but there hasn't been any significant movement so far. So I'm a bit worried in that aspect, but I'm just prepared for it. I'm prepared for the worst.
Well, talking of preparing for the worst, is there another worry in leaving it late? That if you don't do any business until towards the back end of the window and suddenly Arsenal do poach Wilfred Zaha, you're then in a really sticky situation, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think... we are, but I doubt we sell Zaha. As I've said, I doubt we sell Zaha on deadline day or something like that. If Arsenal were going to buy Zaha I said 2 to 3 weeks, but now at least a week before the deadline, the actual window closes, because it would just be criminal to sell Zaha and go into the season without any proper replacement.
Indeed, completely agree there.
Well, we got to hope. We hope he stays. It's sounding like he will. Yeah. You're always very optimistic. And we can look forward to a great season. We can also look forward to a great interview here on the show, because we know that Palace are a club very, very involved in the community in Croydon. And it's a delight to say we're going to be welcoming Inspector Jack Rowland onto the show in just a moment's time. He's a man who does fantastic work helping young kids in the area stay on the right path. We'll be hearing from him in just a moment.
This is Love Sport.
Crystal Palace are a club who do great things on the pitch and a club who do great things off it as well. It's a pleasure to say we're joined on the line by Inspector Jack Rowland, who works with the charity Divert to keep kids on the right track in the Croydon area. Good evening, Jack. Thanks for joining us. Tell us a bit about all the fantastic work you do.
No worries at all. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate coming on. And yeah, so I set Divert up in 2015. We started at Brixton, basically to start speaking with young adults that come into police custody and get them away from their lifestyle into employment, education and training. So the way we've sort of developed it over the last sort of few years is we got a bit of funding from the Home Office and started working at Croydon with Palace for Life. So being a massive Palace fan myself, I was really happy about that. And we've got Aaron, who works for Palace for Life, based directly in Croydon Police Custody, speaking to young adults, listening to what's going on in their lives, and looking to get them away from the lifestyle of crime into employment, education and training. And being so close to Sellers Park, it's about using that moment, teachable moment in police custody, and start transforming these people's expectations and aspirations. It's a real pleasure to have them in there. It's great.
As a first step, Jack, how important is it to just listen to these guys?
Massively, because even though some of them may have been arrested for quite a serious offence, the stories that they tell you about what's going on in their lives. So, for instance, they may have witnessed a friend or relative being stabbed. They may have had some trauma and some adversity in their childhood. There may well be the fact that actually what's going on in their lives right now is such that things are spiraling out of control and they feel they're losing direction. And I think that, you know, you wouldn't expect to have those sort of conversations in police custody, but what that does, it gives people that platform to express themselves and to get it out of their system, so that you've got people like Aaron who can listen and think, right, actually, you've said to me you're interested in retail, you're interested in construction, you're interested in football coaching. What can I do now? What can I do to use this time more constructively to get you away from these dangers, this lifestyle, so that you can effectively transform your life and bring you into more of a family, more of a environment where there are people around you that are going to help you and effectively care for you. So really important.
Hello, hello, Jack. Nick here. Glad we got to speak at long last. We've been tweeting for weeks.
Yeah, really good.
How much money do you think it saves then by getting kids out of that cycle that they're in, compared to maybe going through prison or whatever? I mean, it must save a fortune, mustn't it?
It does, and we're just being evaluated at the moment, so we're hoping to sort of lift that sort of financial side of it more. But if you think that even police custody time, so if you think that it costs the taxpayer around £1,000 over a 13-hour stay for someone to be in custody for 13 hours.
Wow. So, 13 hours?
Yeah, 13 hours.
£1,000?
£1,000, that's right, because you're looking at all the elements around healthcare, people, the detention time, the booking in time, and just alone on that, you know, if you can get people to stop coming back into custody, there's obviously a saving there. But as you said, Nick, the broader question is twofold. First of all, the fact that if we prevent this young person from committing more of a serious offence, a violent offence, that there's massive savings in there. It costs around £25,000 to £30,000 to investigate a serious assault. And you're looking at even £3 to £3.5 million all in to investigate the society cost of a murder. But in detention in prison, you're still looking at around £50,000 to £60,000 a year. So for me, there's the cost and the saving, but then there's the investment. Because if you get young people that come into police custody, into employment, that start paying 20% tax, you then can start talking about the actual contribution they're making. And I'm almost confident that as we expand across London even more, we expand beyond six sites, Divert will actually almost pay for itself, because I think that, you know, I'm confident that over the next few years we'll be getting people that will be starting up their own businesses, having been in custody 5 or 6 years ago. It's really exciting. And the thing for me is having football at the heart of it, and having a club like Palace in the centre of Croydon, in the centre of Croydon Police Custody, for me it's a great conduit to get those young people away from that lifestyle, for sure.
And swinging us over to Palace, in what way are they involved then? Say you get a young chap or a young lady says that they'd like to do, I don't know, sports psychology or physiotherapy, or even just want to learn to be a ref or anything like that. How does the club get involved?
Well, the great thing about Palace for Life, and recently I've been made an ambassador of the charity to talk about what they do and advocate for the foundation, is they don't just connect people into football and opportunities in football. They're a massive local gateway into everyday employment, whether it's retail into like the Whitgift Centre, whether it's local construction opportunities. They're a really good local pathway into a variety of opportunities. But obviously, what we find is we get a lot of young people that have come through academy football, that their lives have suddenly gone down sort of the wrong step. We can then reconnect them to their love of football, you know, whether it's playing at a lower level or, as you say, getting involved in some form of coaching. But at the same time, bolt on extra sort of provision around employment into retail, construction, so that, you know, that sort of impetus can be built on, so that Palace for Life, for instance, you know, if we get the Westfields Centre in Croydon, for instance, there'll be lots of provision for opportunities there that Palace for Life will tap into. But we also work with and I'm happy to say, is we work with Millwall Community Trust in Lewisham, and we work with other coaches across other sites, and they all share and interconnect all the London-wide provision as well. So sometimes we get people working in the city and other parts of London to sort of join that wider network out. And as we hope to expand, we want to work with more foundations, football foundations, so that each local area in London is represented by a coach working in police custody, working for that respective foundation, for sure.
Jack, it sounds like you're doing amazing work to help get these young people back on the rails. But how hard is it for you to do that? Do you find that when you approach potential employers or educational establishments that these guys face judgment because they have been in police custody in the past?
Yeah, I think there's always something to turn that into sort of a positive. What I mean by that is when people come into police custody, they're arrested on suspicion of an offence. So they're not necessarily offenders. And I get away from that word when I describe the people that come through the programme. What I say to employers and organisations is I say, look, these are young people that have done something that's probably not the right thing. They've done something stupid. They've made a bad choice. And a copper has arrested them for the right reasons. Now, I always say, you know, I put myself in the position of as a 19-year-old, as we were all 19-year-olds once. And I'm sure that we've done stuff that's stupid that we didn't get caught for. And if we had, we would have most likely been arrested. But it doesn't make us bad people. We are young adults then making poor informed decisions. And what I also say to employers and organisations is, there may well be something that this young person gives you that no one else through your current recruitment stream is, and that actually a lot of young people we deal with, are doing the wrong things, but actually they've got the right skills. And I think it's about influencing and changing the way organisations see young people that have come through not just police custody, but through criminal justice in general.
I suppose the thing is to get them before they commit any crimes, though, isn't it? Which is infinitely more difficult, I'd imagine, isn't it?
Exactly. It's and I think, you know, the reason why I've used police custody was I used to run some jobs fairs in Stockwell, and they worked really well. But as you said, the hard thing about that was getting young people on my radar to that event. And the whole idea about Divert was basically I was having a brew in custody, and I just realised I don't need to invite anyone to anything because in the last possible way they're already here. You know? And I just thought, you know, and I'll share an anecdote with you, but a gang member out in Stockwell once said to me, "Stop harassing me with your opportunities." And what he didn't realise,
stop offering
about
me a cup of tea.
Yeah, stop trying to get me a job, basically. And what I realised that actually became a bit of a mantra around, you know, if someone wants to change direction of their life, let's throw everything at them to help them do that. But I think, you know, for me, what I'd like to do going forward is create more of that space outside of custody, so that when officers come into contact with young people that want that help, that want that new direction, whether they're victims of crime, whether they're people that are stopped, whether they're people that are vulnerable, how we can get people referred into local organisations directly. So I've got a plan around that, which I'm sure will develop over time. But I think that you're right. It's the art of diversion, and the benefits of diversion are such that if you do it right, you really will change someone's direction and get them away from those negative influences, for sure.
Hi, Jack. Just regarding the actual community and the police force, are you actually happy with where you're at right now, or do you think there's still room for improvement in terms of relationship between the two?
Between communities and police, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I was in Parliament today talking about stop and search, talking about diversion. I think we're getting there. I think we're starting to show signs of how we can work closely. We're always going to have honest conversations around what's going on in the street. We're always going to be accountable with the community. I think that for me, there's always opportunities. There's always ways we can collaborate more. I think that you know, the people I work with locally, the organisations I work with Youthiness in Brixton, I work with some really good organisations that are plugged into the community who want things like Divert, who see the value in things like Divert. And I think that it's gonna take it some innovation to help turn that ship. But I think, you know, largely, you know, the police, you know, though we do a really hard job out there, and we do have the broad support of the community in general, but there are areas that we need to work on and build confidence in certain areas of the community to show that what we are trying to do is trying to get a grip of what's going on in the streets at the moment. And we've got a lot of really good, hardworking cops out there trying to do their very best. But small steps, just got to keep taking those small steps to build that trust and confidence, for sure.
Jack, you're doing fantastic work. Thank you for everything you do, both with the police and with Divert. Really, really encouraging to hear about it. And also the fact that Crystal Palace are being so involved as well. Inspector Jack Rowlands there talking about the wonderful work that Divert are doing to get young offenders back on the right track, and really heartening that Palace can be a part of it. Good things on the pitch as well, gents. And coming up, it's time for our Legend of the Week.
This is Love Sport.
Gents, who are you going for this week?
Picture the scene. I can't remember what season it was. We were very, very nearly in League One. We had to win at Stockport away. And this man stepped up and scored right near the death, didn't he, dear? Nearly gave his name away there.
let the listeners take a guess. Just 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5...
Is it Alan Lee?
Yeah, it's Doug Friedman. Where do you start with Dougie? It's been eventful, hasn't it? He's at the club right now.
He's done almost every job. He's just got tea lady left to tick off, and then he'll have done the work.
Yes, he's at the club handling things behind the scenes. Then there's always that suggestion that, oh, Parrish will give him the first team role as a coach, as a manager. It hasn't happened yet, but it has been eventful, his time at Palace. as a player and as a manager.
Well, start as a player. He was top notch, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There's not many forwards that could be ahead of him, really. And I'm about to name about seven.
he's a goal scorer.
But he's Palace through and through. And he was just a smart player. And he was well-liked, wasn't he?
Yeah, he knew the club inside out. And he fit in well, really. I think it was a matter of that. And I just, when you think about Dougie right now, some people are going to be annoyed. Because I know that James, when we was meant to do this last week, we didn't do it, but he was like, don't start me and Dougie because I'm not happy with him. So there are people that don't like Dougie.
Why is he not happy with him?
I think
the whole Bolton thing.
Yeah, the Bolton thing when he left Palace for Bolton. So there are people that don't actually see him, don't like him at all. It is confusing. I don't know what you think about the Bolton situation, Nick, but...
It was a weird one, wasn't it? It was just, he was offered more money, promised loads and loads, and he kind of went. It was all a bit sudden as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
That was when Bolton were they in the Premier League then? I can't remember.
I think they were in the Championship as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just the fact that not everyone, you know, not every decision you make is going to be right. And it's just one of them ones where... It was costly, and he regrets it as well. He has said it. I think he said it on our podcast when we were Home Cell Radio, when he spoke to us. He has regrets for it, and it's just one of them things where you can't really hold a grudge, can you? Well, some people are. Me personally, I understand the decision that he took and why he did so.
When Palace first appointed him as manager, that was his first job in senior management. Was that a sentimental appointment?
I think it might have been. We were a bit... it was when Parrish and CPFC 2010 had taken over. And I don't think they knew who else to go for, really. They wanted somebody who knew the club really well. I mean, he played for us in two spells, 95 to 97 and 2000 to 2008. Yeah. I mean, we got him off Barnet and he'd scored 27 in 47 for Barnet, which is a good return, and literally one in three in his first period with us. And he played 237 times, scored 64 goals in his second period.
If you're actually thinking about when he was appointed, it makes kind of sense because, as you said, he understands the club. And during the hard times, you would want someone to come in who knows the club inside out from his playing days and builds he's the type of person that could build a chemistry with the players.
And managerial wise, he had a very good ethos of the players he brought in, Jedinak being one of them.
Yeah.
He wanted every player to be a leader. He wanted every player to kind of gee everybody up and know what everybody else should be doing. And he said in his interview with us that he wanted a team of leaders, not just one or two.
And I think that's why he had a bit of experience, as you know, when he was a manager bringing in players. And that's why I think he's at the role he is at right now with the sporting director, because the club clearly trusts him with transfers and that side of business.
That said, do you think the club are missing leaders now?
I think a little bit.
It's hard though. In modern football, You look at clubs like even United. Who's their leader, for instance? Like I feel like it's just changed. There aren't any real leaders like back in the day where you look at your captain, you're like, oh, he's the leader. Now it's just
You don't think the same of Luka?
Well,
being the captain,
I guess. Yeah, you could say Luka. There's been times where he has protected Zaha, but yep. When you look at other clubs, when I think about the top six and even non-top six clubs, there isn't any player that pops into my head. He's like, oh, yeah, he's a leader for that team. I feel like them days are kind of done. It's more about technical base rather than leadership.
Yeah.
How often do you think it works to bring in a club legend in a managerial role, a directorial role? Chelsea have obviously just done it with Lampard. Do you think Friedman is a good example? Is he a cautionary tale?
No, I don't think he is. It's only the fact that he was the money was waved at him from Bolton, and he thought, well, I'm gonna have some of this. But he and it's an old cliche, but he based his his team on not letting any goals in and then sort of moved forward to scoring more. We started off quite slowly under him, but we were damn good when he left, in the lead up to when he left. And I always remember we played Blackburn on the game that Ian Holloway was introduced to the fans. And we did play like Barcelona with Dougie's team and no real proper manager. It was
Lionel,
it was,
if you're listening.
No, seriously, it was one of the best games I think I've seen us play. We just tore Blackburn apart, and that was before they went on their big slippery slide. But we just bossed everywhere on the pitch, didn't we?
Yeah, but I just got a quick update regarding the Barnet game. We conceded 2 goals in 2 minutes and it's 2-2.
And Alexander Sola scored two own goals.
Apparently he's dire. Apparently can't play. So someone
had to get... Hang on a minute. We've kicked Alexander a lot tonight, so we need to be fair. Give credit where it's due. If you're a striker and you score 3 minutes in and you then have a stinker, you scored a goal. You did your job, surely.
No, but you have to...
I see both sides of this argument.
You have to perform.
Gary Lineker would do nothing for 90 minutes. He'd score a goal and we'd all go, "That Gary Lineker, he's good."
But if you win the game, fair enough. But if you don't win the game...
Why is that his fault? The defender should... He did his job. He scored a goal. He put you 1-0 up and the defenders are rubbish. Why are you blaming Alex?
I'm not watching the game right now, but he might contribute to that. He might be giving away the ball and just being so sloppy.
Oh, he's the striker.
You never know. He might be playing in midfield.
Alex, if you're listening, it's game over, mate. Go back to Scandinavia. They're not having you.
Yeah, but we conceded 2 goals in 2 minutes. It's such a Palace thing to happen then. Yeah.
It's funny that we're playing Barnet because that's who we brought Dougie from. Yeah. 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 Where were we at before you rudely interrupted us with that bad news?
I don't know.
It's summer. We're not really in the groove, are we? He was a good manager and it was sickening that he went. And he, in the interview with us, which you can still find online in the whole radio archives, there's a name from the past, which are via the backofthenest.com site, which if you haven't looked at yet, I implore you to do because it's brilliant. I forgot my point now. It is summer, isn't it? But yeah, he did say that he massively regretted going. And it was the worst decision he ever made. Whether that was because he got no transfer money at all from Bolton.
Yeah, I was about to say, if he'd stayed there on the big money contract and Bolton weren't now about to disappear into the ether, would he feel slightly differently about the move? He wouldn't regret it if he was manager and they were in the Premier League.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But I'm just thinking about right now as well. What do you think about his role right now? Of course, we don't know exactly what he's doing, he's involved in the transfers, isn't he? And...
I don't actually know what he does.
He's a sporting director.
Yeah, but what does a sporting director actually do?
It depends on the club. But genuinely, they look at transfers. They're involved with transfers and that side of things.
So Roy says, I need a left back I need a right back that's good at going forward but also good at tackling. Get me one of those. Goes to Dougie and Dougie gets the scouts.
In theory, that might be the case, or it might work another way. But let's say he's involved with transfers. What do you think about him so far in his new role?
Well, he's obviously sitting there at his desk with his trotters up to coin a phrase. Who used that phrase? Who said with your trotters up?
I'm not too sure.
Bloke from EastEnders. He's talking about David Cameron. I don't know, because if everything's behind the scenes...
Oh, yes, no, you mean Danny Dyer.
Danny Dyer, that was
David
it.
David Cameron.
Yeah, he was saying...
Yeah, he was talking about David Cameron. It was a pink joke, I believe, which we won't go into, as it were, for obvious reasons.
So, yeah, we don't know. I mean, people are saying, we haven't bought anybody, let's panic. But we don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Mm. But it's weird, because nowadays you still see people blame him, Parrish, whereas there is another man there that is involved, and it seems like no one really thinks about it.
Well, it's very interesting that you should talk about Palace fans blaming Parrish, because we've seen serious protest at certain clubs' owners this week. Arsenal fans have started a campaign. They've started a hashtag WeCareDoYou, directed at owner Stan Kroenke. Their petition is up to 92,000 signatures. They sent an open letter to the board saying, listen, we're not happy with this. We're not asking for Kroenke out, by the way. What we're asking for is Kroenke change. You need to start turning up to games. You need to start putting money into the club. You need to show us you care. The Kroenkes, to their credit, have responded today, and what they basically said is, sorry lads, we're rubbish now and we can't compete for any trophies. With that in mind, should Palace be fairly happy with who they've got in charge? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. Hashtag we care, do you? That's the message to the Kroenke family from Arsenal fans. They've issued a letter demanding more, essentially, from the owners, demanding more commitment, more investment, more progress. And to the Kroenke's credit, Josh Kroenke, the son of owner Stan, has responded to the statement. In quite surprising style, he's admitted that the club can't compete for what he sees as top trophies. And he said, my dad's really upset about this. So they are taking it seriously. But what we've got here is a supposedly elite club who in the last 15 years have been in the Champions League final going, yeah, well, to be honest, lads, we're not going to put any money in because we're not going to win anything anyway. When you see owners of Premier League clubs being so pessimistic, do you think that actually Palace fans should feel pretty chuffed with Steve Parrish?
Well, it's not only Steve Parrish running the club. There's the American owners as well. Josh.
I'm a bit sketchy on the details, but somebody told me that the American owners are looking to sell their shares in little bits.
Little bits?
Yeah, so you might have 500 people owning the shares that in the club that the Americans owned.
So they want
they're kind of Bitcoining their ownership.
Bitcoin.
But of course, we haven't seen anything from them so far, really. We'll promise the new stadium, which it is in plans, and there's a minor issue with the transport.
Yeah.
But training ground, I'm not too sure about. I think something's happened there.
Yeah, well,
we bought a land, yeah.
We bought Gambardo's the goals over in Copa's Cope.
Yeah, so they own the Philadelphia 76ers in the NBA. It's not only Crystal Palace.
How are they doing?
They had a eventful season last season. They didn't do too well, probably below. They're probably expected to do a bit better. They own a hockey team, which the name just flew out of my head right now.
But they're not actually. They don't seem to be involved in the day-to-day running. I know they've got Parrish as the chairman, and he's running the day-to-day things. But yeah, you want them involved a bit more. You hardly see them at Selhurst. I mean, Patrick met one of them at the Football Factory in New York that show games live. They've quite a Palace following. Get out to this bar in New York and watch all their home games.
But it's hard. It's like with Stan Kroenke. Of course, you want to see him at more Arsenal games. But if you actually look at the amount of clubs he owns in America, they're still his businesses, and at the end of the day, he's probably caring more about his money because he's showing that he doesn't have a personal feeling towards Arsenal. So you won't see him there. But with Harris and Joshua and David, I think they were at a game. Well, I think they came after, but last game that I remember was the Burnley game before Frank de Boer got sacked.
Yeah.
It's hard, but on TV, when I do watch basketball, I do see them for 76ers. They're there pretty much every day. But it makes sense because they own the New Jersey Devils as well, which is in the same area.
Yeah.
So it is hard. It's not easy to go and come back.
But the word in your sort of there that you used was business. And that's the problem with football in the modern age is the business, I think.
Yeah, it's, you care about.
Gone are the days where the local carpet emporium owner.
Carpet.
Ran the club, or a local businessman ran the club and tried to have the best interest.
Well, Steve Parrish is still Palace owner, but it's still, as I've said, I guess you still care about your own money rather than the club, because as much as you love the club, if you focus on the club rather than yourself, then you could be out in no time if you don't look at yourself. So that's a thing to consider as well.
Here's one. If someone offered you a sugar daddy and that sugar daddy didn't care at all about the club but was a very, very wealthy man or woman, would you take that?
If they didn't care, but Did they invest?
They'll put money in. They have no actual interest in the football club. They've got no passion for the club, but they'll give you a big transfer budget every year.
Yes. Because if that's going
to be silent partners.
I would love it. They could hate us, but if they give us the money, then I don't care.
Your owners are never going to turn up, and if they get bored, they could just drop you.
I don't care about them not turning up, as long as
they
give
the
money.
Does that not bother you at all?
Not really. If they give the money, that's all I care about as a fan.
You're fickle, dear.
No, that's how it is. Like, imagine right now if you had like a transfer budget of like 50 million. Like, I'll be happy. But that's what I care
than
about.
Arsenal have got.
Exactly. Literally. I'll be happy. I don't as much as I'll like it, I don't really care about, oh, if they come to games or not, because they're still business people and they've got other things to do. As long as they invest, that shows that you're caring, even though you're saying that they don't care. But that's enough for me.
But yeah, with Mr. Uncle Ron Nodes, who people have a love-hate relationship with, I mean, he saw us through our best ever period. You used to see him in the bars around the ground before the game. This was before you were born.
Exactly.
Here. And he used to interact with the fans.
Yeah, but Steve Parrish still interacts, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's been
even though he slowed down, yeah, a bit
offish now, but
I guess it makes sense. I'm looking at it from his perspective, I kind of do understand it, because it's like you go on and whatever you try to do, there's always people criticizing you. So he's only human, and he's not going to win clearly.
But you're talking about the sugar daddy giving us loads of money. It's who you've got spending it. Who's actually going to be doing the day to day
running? Roy Hodgson.
Oh no. I mean, I'm worried. Roy Hodgson probably spend 40 million on Andy Carroll, something like that.
No, he'd right the wrongs of the late 90s and go and sign Roberto Carlos as a 53-year-old.
52-year-old on that. 300k.
Well, I think he's in his 40s. He could probably do a job.
Oh, yeah. A left back, maybe. Banana, yeah. Maybe for depth.
We'd have to get rid of the black away kit though and go for the yellow one again, so he feels at home in a Brazilian affair.
No, I love the black away kit.
I hate it.
Do you?
I
don't like it either. And the whole of Twitter is going, "Whoa, look at Palace's new away kit."
I love it.
It's grim.
I love it.
It's too. Where the shimmery bit? It looks like you're being beamed up in Star Trek. Do you know what I mean? Beam me up. What? It's horrible.
I think it's one of our best away kits.
I don't like black kits anyway, apart from the evil sash. But that's more of a leisure wear rather than on the pitch.
Crystal Palace leisure wear. Lord above.
Yeah. We had a black kit a couple of seasons ago, away kit, but that was not nice. This is nice.
They stopped wearing that kit because the players found it difficult to find each other on the pitch. Alex Ferguson, excuse.
What is that? But the floodlights weren't working.
Exactly. When we didn't have floodlights, that's had a spark.
How many teams play in a black kit?
You're asking me a question. How would that?
Quite a lot of elite teams have had black away kits over the year. United have. Real Madrid have.
City did.
Chelsea did. It's not uncommon.
And it's a nice kit.
No one
though.
Has black as a home kit, or very few sides do.
I like it. I think the majority of the fan base does as well. I'm surprised you two.
Yeah,
don't.
I mean, a minority. It's just the fact that the refs don't wear black anymore and wear green and cyan and other puce colours.
They stand out. You don't want them to wear black.
Yeah, but you can't chant "Who's the what's in the black?" then, can you?
No, but you just change it to cyan. It doesn't quite have the same ring to it. Yeah. But.
And then you have half the fans go, "What's cyan?"
Yeah, who's the something in the turquoise?
Yeah.
Oh dear. So yeah, I'd have a sugar daddy. I don't know about the team though.
In football or in life?
We're losing. We bought a 2-0.
And it wasn't Soloff. They've changed it. David Boateng.
Yeah, it's Connor Wickham. Even Soloff didn't even score.
Right, okay. In which case, Alex, I'm sorry, mate, you're in trouble. I did my best, but even I can't defend you here.
What?
Does this scoreline worry you? It's Crystal Palace 2, Barnet 3. Can we take the result of a pre-season friendly remotely seriously, or is it all about fitness?
They've done the crystal ball on us. They've scored 3 goals in 7 minutes, and... Oh, all right. I'm just going to ignore the scoreline for now. In terms of your question, it doesn't really bother me because I'm not watching the game. I'm not really thinking about it. But I know when I go on Twitter right now, people are going to be losing their heads because it's a 2-0 lead against Barnet, which we lost in 7 football minutes.
But we've got half of our squad. I mean, you've got Kouyaté.
Yeah,
I've got to mention Kouyaté. Good luck in the final for Senegal, mate.
I hope
you do it. Is it Friday?
Yeah.
I'll be watching a bit of that. So, yeah, and Wilf is still on holiday.
He's back.
Ayew's still on holiday.
Buying houses in North London, I've heard, Wilf.
Oh, nah. He won't do that, would he? He won't do that.
I've tried for the nibble. Yeah. God loves a try. Well, you'll have to join us next week. Wilf won't have bought a house, but it could be the case that Crystal Palace have got an international champion. Join us then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.